I don't want to see your face no more. Stop, 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 stop this nonsense. This is a slap in the face to American women everywhere. Here I am, trying to enjoy a good, old-fashioned American pastime like karaoke, and some weirdo has to go and ruin it. Who is responsible for this? And I am not going to guess again.
All right, that would be the Guess Who, Sam. They're a Canadian band.
Oh, yeah, Canadian band. Canadian? What? Turn this off immediately. Turn...
You're listening to the Night and Day podcast, featuring the interview archives of Western New York music writer Tom Jennings. Tom has interviewed some of the biggest names in music and entertainment, and now you can enjoy these never-before-heard interviews. Here is your host, Tom Jennings.
Thank you for joining me for another edition of Night and Day. I dug fairly deep in the archives for this one. It's an interview with former lead singer and solo artist, Canadian Burton Cummings. Burton was coming to Lockport, New York, when Lockport was hosting a summer concert series. We bring up the concert series a few times through the course of the interview. Just a little pre-warning, this one has a few, well, probably more than a few, what I like to call warts on it. I was recording it in a classroom, and at one point you can actually hear an announcement over the loudspeaker. There's a little bit of rumbling and some things in that. But hopefully it doesn't deter from the content. Burton is just a fun guy to talk to. He really opens up about his feelings about the group that was touring at the time and probably still is under the name of the Guess Who, and how somebody was savvy enough to grab the rights to the name and able to tour without him and Randy Bachman. And speaking of Randy Bachman, just some wonderful insights on his working relationship with Randy and some of the songs that they wrote over the years. I think you'll be very fascinated with that. And I did ask him to repeat the often told story about the time that he met Jim Morrison in Los Angeles during the early days of his career, and he obliges, and it's kind of a legendary story, and it's funny, even Burton talks about the fact that there are members of the Guess Who that still didn't believe that he actually met Jim Morrison. Anyhow, in spite of the audio quality, I hope you enjoyed this interview. As always, if you could leave me some feedback on iTunes or at whatever platform that you're listening to this podcast on, I would appreciate it. You can always contact me through the podcast as well. My email's up there. And now, without any further ado, the voice of American woman, Mr. Burton Cummings.
Hello, is this Tom Jennings?
This is Tom Jennings. Is this Burton Cummings?
Yes, it is, sir.
Oh, wow. This is quite a pleasure.
Oh, well, please.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a long-time fan. I've been listening to your music for years. I mean, I'm 44 years old, so I certainly didn't...
Oh, thank you very much.
You know, grew up right when you guys were coming out with the Guess Who, but one of my favorite shows of all time was that group you had with Ringo there, and you had David...
Oh, that
Mims
was tremendous.
And, yeah.
What a band that was.
Yeah, I think it was the best one he ever had, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, I looked at some of the other lineups, and I think you might be right, because we had four guitar players, eight singers. There was nothing we couldn't do. No matter whose records we were doing it, it usually sounded like the records.
Yeah, and it was just, and you're right, it was just hit after hit after hit, and it was a lot of fun.
We had Joe Walsh and Timothy Schmidt from the Eagles. We had Todd Rundgren, Nils Lofgren, Dave Edmonds. I mean, it was a really powerhouse lineup. Tremendous songs every night.
Did you guys all have to jam in on one tour bus?
We actually flew. We were in a private plane for the whole 9 months, all over the world.
Wow.
It was great. When we got to Italy and places like that, we had some buses once in a while. But it's funny. One day we were driving along some place in Italy on our way to a show at Via di Recchio or something. I don't even remember the name of the place. And we looked out the right side of the bus, and there was the Leaning Tower.
Wow.
Just happened to be going past the Leaning Tower. That was a great tour. I'll never forget that.
And another of your shows I saw was Sarstock. If you can share some memories of that. I mean, from the audience perspective, it was probably a lot different than being on stage.
Well, the thing is, I think that crowd is in the Guinness Book of Records. I think it was the largest paying crowd ever in North America. To my way of thinking, the AC/DC, they stole that show, The Dead, that day. They were the best thing on. They were just tremendous. The Stones came on after AC/DC, but I don't think the Stones ever really got the crowd going the way AC/DC did.
No, in fact, I wound up actually in the front row by the time the Stones came on because so many people left after the AC/DC set. But it was a long day and it was really hot. So
it was a long, long day. Rush were very good that day too. I remember they were on in the afternoon. So were we. It was pretty hot. We all had to come in on a private train. It was a huge deal. That's the biggest crowd that I had ever played for. The strange thing was when you looked off the stage. See, the stage was really high. It was almost 20 feet high. When you looked off that stage into the crowd went as far back as the horizon. The crowd met the horizon. That's how far back it went.
Yeah.
Pretty remarkable.
It was definitely a remarkable show. And that was, now you were on stage with Randy Bachman, and if we could start...
Yeah, it was the real Guess Who had reformed. For that summer, we were doing several gigs that summer, and that was the real band, not the fake Guess Who that's out there in the States.
What do you think of that Guess Who that's kicking around in the States right now?
Well, they have to live with that, you know, with what they're doing. I mean, it's terrible. What can I say? They've got a different singer every couple of years. You know, it's just, I mean, they're the Platters, basically, you know, or the Temptations. It's the same kind of thing.
Do you think it hurts your career at all in a negative way?
The only thing that hurts me is that they like to use the real records to promote their shows, which has Randy's guitars and my voice and Kurt's guitars, and we're trying to stop that, but they don't, you know, they say they're not using this stuff, but I think they wouldn't be drawing very many people if they didn't use the real records. But it's kind of pathetic. I'm thankful every day that I don't have to do something like that. You know, at least I wrote and sang the songs. When people come to see me, they know they're seeing the real guy.
I've always been curious. How does that happen? How does somebody like, I mean, you've got you, you've got Bachman, but how can somebody wind up with the rights to that name but really not have...
Well, he went and copyrighted the name after the band broke up, and the irony was that for all those years when we had all those hit records, the name had never been copyrighted. So he went, once the band broke up, he went and did some research, and... He found out, to his great surprise, that no one had ever copyrighted the name. So he copyrighted the name, and now under the title The Guess Who, he can have anybody in the band that he wants, legally. I mean, but it's kind of pathetic, because there are other examples of it all over the place. As I said, you know, the Platters, the Temptations, I mean... It happens. It happens from time to time. My real fans, they know the difference. You know, they know that I'm the guy that wrote and sang the tunes.
And speaking of singing, you know, I was on your Facebook page today, anticipating you calling, and I've been reading reports about your voice, and everybody's just saying, and I saw it myself. You sound great. Have you done anything different recently to just...
About 2.5 years ago now, I finally put down tobacco after being an idiot for all those years. I smoked most of my life. I finally put them down, and I think it has... It took a couple years for me to reap the rewards, but I think now for sure I'm singing a little better, a little clearer. And most importantly, It's easier now. I might not sound that much different than I did 2 or 3 years ago. I sound a little better, a little clearer. But the biggest benefit for me is the fact that it's easier now. We just did a pretty hectic tour. We did 20 cities in 31 nights in Canada, starting from the Maritimes and going right to Vancouver Island, right across the country. And every show was over 2 hours. And a couple of times we did 3 nights in 3 cities. Now, I'm 63 now. That's not as easy as it used to be. But I think I'm stronger than I have been in years. And otherwise, I never would have been able to pull that off. So it's good. Now that we're coming back into the States, the band is just on fire. I mean, we've just played so much, you know, that when we go back out in about 10 days, it's going to be hopping. It's really going to be hopping.
And you're playing with a group called the Carpet Frogs. How did you wind up?
I've had the same band since Millennium Night. This is about 10 or 11 years now we're working together. And they are a tremendous cover band. When I'm not with them, they're a tremendous band by themselves. And what helps me is when we do the Guess Who records and my solo stuff, it always sounds like the records because they're a good cover band, you know? So it helps when they're covering my songs. That works to my advantage to a great degree.
And now, when you start your solo tours and everything like that, and you're going to be coming back to the States, you've got a huge catalog to choose from. You got your Guess Who, your solo work, and maybe some covers. What went into putting together the set list for this upcoming tour, or maybe the most recent tour?
Well, I know why people will be coming to see me. They want to hear familiar songs. And in a lot of these places we're playing, they don't want me playing any more than 75 or 80 minutes. So basically, 75, 80 minutes, I can do all hit records for 75 or 80 minutes. Everybody wants to hear No Sugar and Share the Land and American Woman and Hand Me Down World and Laughing and These Eyes and No Time and Clap for the Wolfman. These were all big, big hit records on the radio. So it's very easy to fill 75 or 80 minutes with famous songs. I mean, obviously I could play 2 or 3 hours, but we're going to try and stick to most of the biggest songs that people want to hear, and maybe a couple things from my last album, Above the Ground.
So do you run into a situation where you wish you had a little bit more time and you could fit a few more songs into the set?
Well, I would like to play longer. Not quite as long as we did in Canada, because that was getting a bit tiring. One night we did 2.5 hours.
Wow.
That's okay when you're 25, you know, but I'm 63 now, so that's a little tougher. And I'm singing... See, with my show, it's different than a lot of shows. I'm singing about 80% of the time. We're up there. There's not a lot of long, extended soloing like a Grateful Dead show where they play a guitar solo for half an hour. We don't do that. Basically, we're recreating hit records. So most of the time we're on stage, I'm singing. So, you know, 75, 80, 85 minutes, that's still a lot of singing. But I would play longer, given the opportunity, probably, you know.
And if we could talk, maybe I just I know you've told a couple of these stories before, but you know I'm doing a local piece for the Lockport series, and so I definitely want to incorporate them. One of my favorite stories is the time that you met Jim Morrison at a party. Would you mind telling that one?
It was the very first night I ever set foot on California soil, and I went walking. You know, everybody else. We were doing American Bandstand the next day, I think, and everybody else went to the hotel, and I went walking, and I walked for miles down Sunset Boulevard to the Whiskey Go-Go because I just wanted to see it, where all these people had played, the Doors and the Birds and the Springfield and the Youngbloods. So I went in there and sat around for a while, and I said, okay, that's great, I can go back to the hotel now. And I went outside and hailed a cab, and the cab said to me, well, I guess you're going to the big party too. And you know, I played along. I said, yeah, I'm going too, let's get going. Next thing I know, I'm on my way up into the Hollywood Hills to some huge mansion that's like the Beverly Hillbillies. And he dumps me off there, and I'm a total stranger. I've only been in L.A. about 4 hours by that time, and I'm a total stranger, and I sit at this piano over in the corner of the room, and some guy sits down next to me, starts playing the high-end register, and it's Jim Morrison. And it was very strange. I ended up driving him around all night in his GTO with these two girls that he was with in the back seat, and then they dumped me off. I went and did American Bandstand the next day. I don't think the other three guys in the Guess Who ever believed me. I think a lot of people still don't believe me. But that doesn't matter, because I have the memory for myself, you know. But it was remarkable, and about a year and a half later, he was gone.
Yeah.
I've spoken to Lee Manzarek about this, and he said, well, if you drove him around all night, you probably spent more time with him than most people ever did, which is very strange. And I never told Jim that I was a musician. I didn't bother. But he doesn't need to hear for the 10 millionth time, oh, I'm your biggest fan, you know. He didn't need to hear that from me. I just drove him around because he was too drunk to drive.
Wow.
But it was quite a night, I'll tell you. It was he was a very bright guy to talk to, very well read. He knew about all the great poets and about all the great Renaissance artists, and he had talked about the universe and what are we inside and relativity. Very, very well read guy. Very bright, but not in the area of self preservation, you know.
Yeah. Well, so then you...
I've heard from David Crosby and different people that Jim could be a very, very ugly drunk. Well, he wasn't with me that night, and the two girls he was with, he wasn't an ugly drunk at all. He was a fascinating drunk, actually, but he did drink a lot of beer.
And I mean, you probably, as far as the prose and the writing thing, that maybe you had more of a connection there that you didn't even really need to bring up the music element.
Well, I was fascinated. I was always fascinated by Jim's lyrics from the time I was young. Way back in the 60s, when the second Doors album came out, I became almost a disciple of the band. I loved what he was doing. The lyrics, it made me grow up a lot as a songwriter, listening to Jim and listening to those lyrics, especially on the second album, where he did a song, not a song, but a poem called Horse Latitudes, where he would just recite stuff and they would make noises in the background. He took the pop rock and roll world to a whole other area that it had never visited before. So I guess I was influenced to the point where I copied him a little bit, and I got ragged on in Rolling Stone. They called me the Neo Morrison, and you know, the fake would-be Morrison. And I guess I was to a great degree by him. But I still, there's something about those records. The records they made, They're very mystical. Still to this day, I've spoken to teenagers in 2010, 2011, and their favorite group is The Doors, you know? And Jim's been gone 40 years. There's something about those records.
Yeah. Well, you must be playing to a lot of different generations of fans as well. I mean, you had the exposure of Lenny Kravitz doing American Woman again, and your songs have definitely held up over time.
Well, that's one thing I'm very proud of as a songwriter. It seems that the songs have never gone away. You know, Randy and I wrote These Eyes in about half an hour or 45 minutes one day. I was still living at home with my mother and grandmother when we wrote that. And I had no idea that, you know, here I am talking to someone in New York 40-odd years later, 43 years, because it was 1968, 43 years later, talking about that song being like a kind of a modern classic. When you're writing this stuff, you don't ever presume that you're enough to have that kind of a record. But when I look back now, we really did leave a mark, you know, we really left our mark on radio. It's been tremendous, the amount of airplay through the years. And you know, funny thing was, in 1969, when These Eyes first hit, radio was still very segregated. And that same year, Junior Walker and the All-Stars on Motown released These Eyes, and it became a hit record for them. And that version would have been played in a lot of urban areas where our white bread version from Winnipeg might not have been, you know? But it crossed some lines for us.
Well, and you were one of the first, I mean, I believe you were the first Canadian group that had a gold record in the U.S., isn't that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think we were really the first, I mean, Gordon Lightfoot had made a mark, and Paul Anka had made a mark, but we were the first band that was really writing its own stuff, like and backing itself up, a Beatles-type band where we wrote and played all our own stuff. I think we were the first ones.
Could you talk a little...
Early anyway. First ones that had some big records, put it that way.
Yeah, very big records. And could you talk just a little bit, just to wrap it up, and I'm going to want to thank you in advance. You just absolute pleasure to chat with you. And I can't wait to see the show. I know in Lockport we're very excited. We've got actually a great first 3 weeks. We've got Stephen Page from the Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah, I know Stephen.
Yeah, Dennis DeYoung, and then
quite a ways.
What's that?
We go back quite a ways. I've known Stephen and Ed for quite some time. Good for him.
Yeah, so he's doing a solo show, and then Dennis DeYoung from Styx, and then followed up by you. So our first 3 weeks are pretty impressive, to say the least.
Excellent. Well, we've got some decent singers coming.
We do. I kind of promote it as the greatest voices of music, because really,
excellent,
between the three of you, that's what you were. I mean, you lent the voices to the songs, and it kind of speaks to the whole thing, like you said, about the guess who that's out there now not having the authentic voice, and so many bands just moving away from their original lead singer. But
yeah, it's kind of sad that happens. But you know, it was like when Mark Lindsay left Paul Revere and the Raiders. It was never quite the same. I don't know what it is. It bothers me to a degree that they're out there doing that. But by the same token, I wish everybody the best in this business. It's hard enough to scratch out a living. I just don't want them using my records and my songs and my voice to promote their shows. Other than that, they can do whatever they like. It's basically a traveling karaoke act, you know?
If we could wrap up with just your maybe discussing your relationship with Randy Bachman over the years. I mean, you two obviously, I mean, the two of you together really created probably the greatest songs of either one of your careers. I mean, you both had some great songs apart from each other, but I mean, is it safe to say that the two of you really brought out the best in each other?
Well, it's a yin and yang thing. You know, first of all, a guitarist loves to write with a keyboard player, and a keyboard player loves to write with a guitarist, because you're coming at the song from two different angles. So that worked for us. And I think the fact that I was so much younger, and he was already married and had one kid and another kid on the way, I was living a much wilder life, and he was living a much older life, more strictly straight, reserved kind of life. I think that worked for us. I was turning him onto the Doors, and he was turning me onto the Hollies and Georgie Fame. And somewhere in the middle, we met on that middle ground, and we wrote some great songs. And we never worked hard at it. And, you know, we wrote These Eyes in about half an hour or 40 minutes. We wrote Laughing in about 25 minutes. These all turned into gold records for us. It wasn't like we would belabor the songwriting for days and days and days, you know. It was just something that happened. It seemed to happen regularly and quite effortlessly. So that's the effect we had on each other. I think we each brought out the best in each other up to a certain point.
Right, and then, I mean, there was a separation for a while and then kind of a coming back together. What was...
Well, you know, we had lifestyle differences in the younger days, but I mean, all that baggage is gone now. When we did Bachman Cummings for 2 or 3 years in the new millennium, we did an album called Jukebox, which was so much fun to do. Really a good album, too. All we did was pick a bunch of stuff we liked when we were kids, and we recorded new versions. There's Beatles songs on there. There's Agent 00 Soul by Edwin Starr. I redid an Elvis song on there. He did Who Do You Love? Bo Diddley. I mean, it was a lot of fun doing that stuff with Randy again. It was like being a teenager again. You know, then we did a couple of television specials and a DVD, and it was fun to do for a few years, but I much prefer being back on my own now, because it lets me be the band leader again.
Right.
I think once you've been, that sounds arrogant, but I didn't mean it to be. It's just that once you've been a band leader, you kind of like to be able to run things completely, every detail. So that's this band now, and I've had the same band for years, but now we're so tight. We just did 21 shows in 30 days in Canada. So we're really ready to come and rock. It's very tight. It's rocking now.
Well, great, man. I'm absolutely looking forward to it. You were of the entire lineup I have this year. I must say, you were the one I was really hoping that I'd have a chance to interview, and I'm definitely not disappointed.
Thank you. Very, very, very kind words. Thank you very much.
Well,
man.
Thank you for the music. I tell you, there's some things you say, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, that you know your songs become a soundtrack of people's lives, and there's just certain songs when I hear them, I feel very happy, and I know that. Even that extended version into American Woman, I remember when that used to get played on the FM radio a lot, and I still prefer that long.
Off Across the Sky.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to do that live, and it ended up being about half an hour long.
Yeah.
We would just take people on a big, long ride, you know?
Yeah, it's a great song, and it just never gets old, and it said you know, your voice is just one of those voices, you hear it, it just makes you feel good, and... You know, all that kind
goodness.
Of stuff.
Well, you're making my half size go up now with all these compliments. Thank you, man. Thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you. And I said, we'll look forward to seeing you in Lockport. I try to, you know, get a copy of the interview and the pre-press and stuff off to the bands when they're there. I don't know about, you know, if there's any kind of meeting.
Just come back and say, oh, my road manager's name is... It's easy to remember. And if you just tell them that we interviewed, that we spoke on the phone, come back and say hello.
Okay. Well, that would be an honor. I'd really like that a lot.
Okay,
and I'll tell
you. Thank you.
Thank you. And you're going to have a great time there. It's a really nice, it's a wide open venue, and there's a lot of people. Randy Bachman played there last year and had a great crowd, and I'm sure you're going to do
excellent.
Just as well.
Good.
So.
Good. We'll be rocking.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much,
all right,
man.
Bye.
Well, there you have it. And just a postscript to this story, a lot of artists say, hey, come back and meet me after the show, and it just doesn't happen for whatever reason. In the case of Burton Cummings, I did ask for his road manager, and after the show in Lockport, he brought me up on the bus. Just a big hulking guy. I'm a fairly short person. I'm 5'5". I'm just going to guess off the top of my head from memory, and again, it's been 7 years or so, that Burton's well over 6 feet tall. So he has me come on the bus, just gives me the biggest, sweatiest bear hug, and we just got to sit around and chat music. He signed some albums for the father of a friend of mine. Just a wonderful, wonderful experience. So if Burton ever listens to this, which I don't know if he will, or maybe if someone that knows Burton is listening to this, man, that was a great experience. Again, I get to meet a fair amount of musicians in person, but for the most part, it's over the phone. And when you really just get a chance to sort of sit with them and shoot the breeze, it's always a great time. Well, with that being said, look forward to a new episode coming up. I think the next one we'll be posting will be in the next week or so, and it will include just some clips from different people that have talked about different things. I've got some stuff about Mickey Thomas, where he talks about We Built This City and his feelings about it being voted the worst song in the world, which is something I don't agree with. Some comments from Brad Gillis about working with Ozzy Osbourne in the wake of the death of Randy Rhoads, and maybe just a couple other clips as I kind of go through the catalog. Until then, thanks always for listening. Again, please leave your feedback. I look forward to hearing from you, and have a great day.